styles of parenting, mentioning transformational parenting and transactional parenting. In transactional parenting, as Sayed told us, it's just having things done. In transformational, it's where the child becomes the leader. As Sayed was explaining about these two parenting styles, it popped up in my mind the beautiful verse that says, رَبَّنَا حَبْلَنَا مِنْ أَزْوَاجِنَا وَذُرِّيَاتِنَا قُرَّةَ أَعْيُنٍ وَجَعَلْنَا لِلْمُتَّقِينَ إِمَامًا.
Yes.
This exactly. Imama thing, term is exactly, it's like, it's so beautiful because I recite this a lot when I'm praying and I think about it a lot, that you just don't want to have children who do good things. You want them to be role models. You want them to be, you know, pioneers. You want them to be leaders of the society. And inshallah, amongst the 313 heads that when the Imam of our time reappears, Imam Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, our children and us would be amongst one of those 313 to be Imam. So how to educate and train and bring up your children who become transformational and not merely transactional people?
Yes, very. That's a good way of, you have presented a beautiful verse for that, and that's endorsed the way I have presented my argument and reasoning. Basically, as you very rightly said, that we are, as we believe and as we aspire for and as we pray for the advent of the awaited Imam, and we live in an age which seems to be very close to that era. We feel that we have, the world is moving towards that goal, and that all of us cherish for that. But we need to prepare ourselves and our children for that, and we need to become community leaders and role models for the whole society. So we need to become competent people in whatever we do. Competence, being a salih person, because إِنَّ الْأَرْضَ يَرِثُهَا عِبَادِيَ الصَّالِحُونَ. The good people of this world are going to inherit the wilaya and the rulership of this world. And salih, being salih in the terms of the Holy Quran, is being competent, as I said. A person who is competent, who is capable, has this quality that in any context, in any situation, he knows how to apply his knowledge and skills to a given situation. Whether he's praying.
How did you correlate between salih and competence?
Because salih means good deeds. What do we mean by good deeds? Good deeds are those actions which take us towards closer to God.
Correct.
Because إِلَيْهِ يَسْعَدُ الْكَلِمُ الطَّيِّبُ وَالْعَمَلُ الصَّالِحُ يَرْفَعُهُ. What goes up to Allah Almighty is the pure faith and thoughts and feelings in our hearts. Allah accepts from the muttaqeen. Muttaqwa is something in the heart. Mm-hmm. Pure feelings and thoughts are which Allah Almighty accepts. لَنْ يَنَعْلَ اللَّهُ لُهُمُهَا وَلَا دِمَاهُهَا بَلْ يَنَعْلُهُ التَّقْوَى مِنْكُمْ. What Allah receives and accepts is inner condition. But what takes it up? What elevates it towards Allah Almighty? That's amal salih. The amal, the good deeds which are capable and enough to make our feelings and thoughts and our faith accepted for Allah Almighty, acceptable to Allah Almighty. And good deeds, therefore, are actions which are effective in leading us to that path. Things which are carried, the right things, competence is doing the right things in the right way. It's also equal to ihsan. What is ihsan? Excellence. Doing things par excellence. Normally we translate ihsan into doing someone a favor. Mm-hmm. No, when Allah Almighty says, "Wa bil walidayni ihsana," He doesn't want us to do a favor to our parents. No, we aren't doing them a favor. We're doing something which is good. The best way to take care of them, respect them, and the best possible way to do so, that is excellence. And that excellence is obeying Allah Almighty. Ihsan is obeying. Mal ihsan, it is obeying and being obedient to Allah Almighty. submitting to Allah Almighty, as if you see Him before yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't see Him, at least you know that He's watching over you.
Yeah.
So this is doing the best thing possible is amal salih,
right.
Is with ihsan. And this is competence.
Right.
So basically, amal salih, good deeds, is the action, doing the right things in the right way with competence. Competence means application of your knowledge and skills to a given situation. So we want to promote competence. Just as the master of the faithful, Imam Ali, said, قِيمَةُ الْمَرْءِ مَا يُحْسِنُ not مَا يَعْلَمُ. The value of a person is based on what he does in a competent way. مَا يُحْسِنُ what he does in the best way possible. So it's basically the worth of a human being depends upon competence. Today, unfortunately, we want our children to get degrees, PhDs. It's a piece of paper. It's worth nothing, according to Mawla Ali. Competence, what is worth something is what you can deliver. Today, multinationals are not looking for PhDs. They're looking for competent people. They're looking for people who can deliver. We don't want... Yes, degrees are good. They show maybe how much you know. But what can you deliver to society? That requires competence. That requires not only knowledge, it requires skills. Knowledge and skills and the proper attitude together give you the proper behavior, the proper conduct. Proper behavior, whether it is with respect to you, Allah Almighty, in the special relationship that you have with Allah Almighty, of worshipping Him, the devotional worship that we have, that also requires competence, knowledge and skills. When you want to deal with other human beings, your parents, your siblings, your spouse and your children, you need competence.
And competence means knowing what is right and being able to do what is right.
Exactly.
Okay. We've reached the end of another episode of the program, Islamic Upbringing, with our expert, Sayyid Salman Naghawi. We talked about two types of parenting styles, transformational and transactional parenting, and how we as Muslim parents can raise competent children. If you have any questions, don't forget to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, Disrespecting a Poor Believer. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created this world to test each one of us. We get tested every day and every moment of our lives. We are required to make the right choices every step of the way. Unfortunately, many fail in this test. For example, if someone is poor, we treat them differently than the rich and the wealthy. This is problematic, brothers and sisters. The Prophet of Allah, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, said, "Anyone who abases a poor believing Muslim for his poverty, and makes light of him, he has made light of Allah and remains in the wrath of Allah until he goes to one whom he has wronged and apologizes to him, and the other becomes pleased with him. The Prophet of Allah shows us an escape route. The only way out is to go and seek forgiveness from the poor person and do something to make him pleased with you. If you fail to do so, this means you are up against Allah, and Allah's wrath awaits those who are up against him. So, you know, we make mistakes here and there in life. You know, sometimes we're not careful. Sometimes because of the status quo, because of what is going on around us, we start acting in a particular manner. Isn't that right? And in that process, sometimes we trample over the rights of the oppressed and the rights of the poor and less fortunate people. So the Prophet of Allah is guiding us towards salvation. And the way to do that is to apologize to that poor person who we may have wronged and rectify our attitude. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the topic of disrespecting a poor believer. And we said that anyone who does that and anyone who offends a poor believer because he is poor, because of his economic status, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala takes offense of it. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that now you are up against me because you have disrespected a poor believer because of his economic status. When it comes to insulting a believer, especially a poor believer, Allah considers it to be a very personal issue. The Prophet of Allah said that Allah said to him, "Anyone who abases my believing servant, he has declared war against me." A war against Allah? Wow. That's a lost battle. The Prophet of Allah used to be kind to the believers and extra kind with the poor and destitute believers. The Prophet of Allah said, "Anyone who annoys a believer, Allah annoys him. And anyone who saddens a believer, Allah will bring sadness to him." Again, look, Allah annoys someone who annoys a believer and makes him sad, who makes a believer sad. These formulas are very clear. So we taking up a fight against a believer, or disrespecting or insulting a believer, especially a poor believer, is basically and essentially and in a nutshell taking up a war and a fight with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And who in the right state of their mind would ever do that? So make sure that we are respecting, we're giving the due respect to any believer, whether they are poor or wealthy.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
The EU is a direct partner in the Zionist regime genocide in Gaza, and this is not a simple case of Western double standards. The Zionist regime sees Europe as a lackey, though Europe collectively carries significant economic weight. In this regard, we have taken a look at World Media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Europe stayed silent when the Zionist regime began pounding the besieged Gaza Strip with a kind of ferocity that could only lead to a genocide. In fact, Europe remained silent when the word genocide quickly replaced the earlier reference to the Israeli-Hamas war starting on October 7th. Those familiar with Europe's political discourse and action regarding the Zionist regime and Palestine must already realize that most European governments have always been on the side of the fabricated regime of Israel. However, if this is entirely true, what can we make of the latest comments by the foreign policy chief of the European Union, Josep Borrell, when he seemed to lash out at Israel on January 23rd, accusing it of ceding aid for generations? During a joint press conference in Brussels with Egypt's foreign minister, Sameh Shoukry, and EU Commissioner for Enlargement, Oliver Varley, Borrell said that Israel cannot have the veto right to the self-determination of the Palestinian people. Borrell's frustration with Tel Aviv stems from the realization that Israel does not take Europe seriously. He's right. Tel Aviv regime never truly saw Brussels as a strong and relevant political actor in comparison to Washington or even London. Recent months have further exposed this unequal relationship. Soon after the Al-Aqsa flood operation, European leaders, starting with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, and French President Emmanuel Macron flocked to Tel Aviv, too. In the words of Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte, reiterate that Israel has every right to defend itself. But European support exceeded that of language or political gestures. It also arrived in the form of military and intelligence support. Reuters reported, comparing the large sum to the 32 million euros worth of defense exports that were approved by Berlin in all of 2022, as of November 2nd, the German government has approved the export of close to 303 million euros worth of defense equipment to Israel. This is just one example. While the Americans did not shy away from assuming the role of partner in the Gaza genocide, the EU's position seemed dishonest and, at best, morally inconsistent. Borrell initially approached the genocidal war from an entirely pro-Israeli perspective. He said, when asked in an interview last November whether Israel is committing war crimes in Gaza, "I am not a lawyer." A minute later, he asserted that Hamas Al-Aqsa flood operation was undoubtedly a war crime. "This is not a simple case of Western double standards. The Zionist regime sees Europe as a lackey, though Europe collectively carries significant economic weight, which only in the case of the Zionist regime it refuses to translate into political leverage. Until Brussels learns to resolve this dichotomy, it will continue with this kind of bizarre foreign policy." One reason why the Zionist regime sees Europe as an inferior political actor compared to Washington is because the Europeans have linked much of their foreign policy agenda to the US, which in turn is motivated by Tel Aviv regime's agenda and interest. This is how it works. When Macron joined Biden in unconditionally supporting the Zionist regime in the beginning of the war, Netanyahu remarked that he was highly appreciative of the French position. But when, on November 11th, Macron dared criticize Israel's killing of women and babies in Gaza, Netanyahu immediately lashed out, accusing Macron of making a serious mistake, factually and morally. Slowly, Europe began developing a somewhat stronger position on Gaza, though certainly not strong enough to demand an end to the war or threaten consequences if the war does not end. On January 22nd, the EU held a ministerial meeting inviting the Zionist regime's foreign minister, Israel Katz, and Palestinian foreign minister Riaz al-Maliki to attend. The conference was a feeble European attempt to signal the EU's readiness to assert itself as a relevant political actor in the West Asia region. The truth, however, is that the EU was motivated by other factors, including a green light from the Biden administration, which, as of late, has grown more frustrated with Netanyahu for refusing to engage in Washington's discourse about future visions and the two-state solution. Also, the regional instability, whether in the Red Sea or in Lebanon itself, a result of the war, continues to pose a direct risk to Europe's economic and strategic interest in the region. Europe's relationship with the West Asia region is in some ways different to that of Washington. While the U.S. is always ready to reinvest its geopolitical priorities, Europe is indefinitely bound by the rules of physical proximity to the West Asia region, its vital geography, its resources, and its people. Europe knows this. Borrell, who devised the maxim that Europe is a garden, the rest of the world is a jungle, and the jungle could invade the garden, also understands that the instability in the West Asia region could endanger his precious garden even the war is over. This is why Borrell was keen on the EU's ministerial meeting, but instead of engaging in serious talks, the meeting further highlighted Europe's irrelevance, at least in the eyes of the Zionist regime. Katz had come to the meeting to present plans for an artificial island off the coast of Gaza, likely to displace Palestinians from the Strip, concepts that had nothing to do with the peace talks, Borrell said. Other top EU diplomats said the videos were part of old ideas presented by Katz in a previous role that they surprised everyone in the room. But the EU diplomats should not be surprised. After all, their governments are the ones who have empowered the child killer regime of Israel and disempowered Palestinians over 75 years. Even now, many of them continue to champion Israel's mass killings in Gaza as Tel Aviv regime's right to self-defense. If Borrell truly wishes to develop a political backbone, he should fully back international law and advocate for the use of the EU's massive economic leverage to put pressure on the child killer regime of Israel to end its war and military occupation of Palestine. Failing to do so gives great credibility to the claim that Brussels, just like Washington, is a direct partner in the Zionist regime's war on the Palestinian people.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arabi English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of
You Station. We're here again, and I'm Bital.
And I'm Asma. Once more, we're at your service. And I guess we're going to have one of these extraordinary sessions in
exactly.
here.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So everybody talks about the laws of attraction. I used to be interested in that whole notion of the laws of attraction, but then... Now, as I'm much grown up, I hope so at least, I feel like, what a nonsense it is.
It was so harsh. By the way, we are ruling over the world here by the rules of your station, not rules of attraction. You know what?
Of course.
Just kidding. Putting that aside, the thing is, I do not believe in these law in a way that they are talking about it.
Well, do you believe
like
me?
Energies.
Do you agree with me
yeah.
that at a certain time they started to impose that idea on people that whatever you think you're going to get it.
Yeah.
And it was mostly, their audience were mostly the youngsters who were at the very beginning of their life to create their future. And also it was this expansion of materialism everywhere. Like how much you have is going to determine who you are and things like this. And then suddenly these laws of attraction come to go viral and be the trend everywhere. Everybody is saying, yeah, I believe one day I'm going to have this. And I do believe that I'm going to have it.
Beautiful. The thing is, the saddest part is that there is still something like that. I mean, for the people or the students who are studying for big exams like university entrance examination, the people just tell them, okay, you can write down your wish, the major you want to be accepted in university.
I hated that notion.
On the paper. And
still I'm hating that.
Yeah, I know you hate it.
Come on, you make youngsters believe in something. Okay, you tell them that, write it down everywhere. And what if they cannot, even if they try so hard, what if they cannot achieve it?
They will get disappointed. They feel like, okay, no matter how much you try, there is no way I can
trust
beat a
me, beer. It's not just despair and disappointment. Yeah. Many, many youngsters would get to the point where they're depressed and they would wish to end their lives.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that you should bring such notions into the minds of people and then leave them there. Like I'm telling you, I don't say, well, first thing first, the laws of attraction tells you that. Whatever you plan for your future, you just keep thinking about it.
Yeah.
Okay, they also believe in the effort that you put forward because that's also important. But here's not the end of the story. You have something in your mind. You try so hard for it. You write it all over in your room. And then you start imagining. You start creating your world. There is this castle in the air and the balloon of hallucination in your mind. And then suddenly that balloon is pricked.
Yeah.
And then you understand that, okay, reality does not go with any rule. There is no law for reality.
Exactly.
You cannot attract things you love. Try to keep this in mind that, okay, if you have an aspiring mind, if you are ambitious, if you want something, yes, you try for it, but have it in mind that sometimes things would not go according to your wishes. Life is the realm of unexpected things that might happen in the middle.
You know what? The thing is, whatever you think about will make your mentality about the world. And your mentality is really important because you are acting according to the mindset that you have.
Yeah, now this is acceptable.
Yeah, this is the point. You know, they wanted to teach these, but by
mistakes. It went another way.
Yeah, not by mistakes for sure, by their own benefit. And these business matters that will, at behind the curtain, it will lead people to wrote that there is something like laws of attraction. If you think about something, it will come to you.
Instead, they would have said, look at the bright side in a logical way.
Exactly.
You know?
But this is not something that can be bought by people. People want to be hopeful.
Exactly,
Think beautifully and want to deny the bitterness of life.
You know, us as human beings are interested in those people who give us our wishes, like the wish sellers.
Yeah.
Like, I want someone to tell me that you're going to achieve what you want. I want to hear that. And when I hear that, I would stick to that idea. But unfortunately, life does not go that way. You must be embracing the reality of life. I don't want to say that whatever you have in your mind, you're not going to achieve it. No. I just say that for 90%, everything is possible.
Yeah.
But there is this 10% that might determine the entire result and outcome of the things you have in your mind.
And we're going to talk more about it after a short break, by the way.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. Well, this is the realm of the Youth Station. We're talking to you about the laws of attraction, how much you believe in it, is it true or not, or if we have any substitute for it, yeah. How do we put it, what do you think of it?
Exactly. You mentioned something that we need to hear that we're perfect, we can achieve whatever we want. And this need, where does it come from? You know, because we are living in a world full of false hopes, false information, and so on. And we want to actually fill this empty hole in ourselves with these hopes that, okay, in this world, specifically in this world, I have to achieve whatever I want. And the problem with that laws of attraction is exactly that, that whatever you do has a response. Yes, it has a response, but not necessarily in this world.
I'm just saying that there is no law for attraction. I'm just saying there's no law. Okay, you want to be a doctor, Bita. You tried so... Didn't you have among your friends someone who tried so hard, but she couldn't make it through?
Yes, yes.
So what happened to her?
You know, they felt like they're broke. They felt like they didn't have the skill and they didn't have the capacity.
But were they dimwits? They were not. Well, didn't they do all their best?
Yeah.
They did, but they couldn't get it. I have a lot of those people in my life as well. And the exams that they go through, not necessarily they're going to look like the winner, but they have done all their best.
And not necessarily. It's their problem. Sometimes it's about the fairness of the exam. Sometimes it's about situations and so many other factors. Okay, this life is more complicated than what you
think. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. There is no law to put it as a mother.
Yeah.
If you teach your children about the laws of attraction and tell them, okay, my son, okay, my daughter, look, life works this way. You put an image in your head and then everything is going to help you go into that direction.
Yeah.
Like you are going to attract the things you love. Instead of that, tell them that if you look brightly into your future, you might achieve something of your wishes. But do not go too deep into dreaming, because not all dreams are going to come into reality.
You know, the problem of this rule itself is oversimplifying the life. You know, whenever you try to oversimplify everything, you will ruin the whole story.
Exactly.
And, you know, there is a beautiful example about these kind of rules and so on, that when you try to oversimplify and put everything in a rule, you have to omit the details. You have to omit the complexities of the world that you're living in, and it will lead you to be a really superficial, narrow-minded person.
Exactly. So, you know, even in our narrations, we have it, like we have this statement that says, "Tafa'alu bil khair tajidu," that is, to think hopefully, and then it would happen to you.
Yeah.
Okay, they did not mean that for sure it would happen to you. No, there's no sureness in life, you know? There are a lot of details that might happen. There are a lot of unexpected things that might get in the middle of your way. And then you should not consider yourself as a loser, because this has been your life. This has been your battlefield. Nobody knows how much you've been through. Like, yes, the Holy Book of Quran and the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, they all tell us to be hopeful. They all tell us, like, even we have it for the sinners. Like, the Holy Book of Quran tells all the sinners to be hopeful. Like, never be disappointed from God's blessings
mercy, yeah.
and His mercy. Like, He's always there, and whenever you feel like repenting, He's there to accept it from you. All the doors are always open for you. But that doesn't mean that, okay, I would go through all the sins I like in the hope that, okay, the door is open for me. It's the same thing because, you know, because the laws of attraction and I don't know whatever. No, you have to try. You have to look at it hopefully, brightly. But then have in mind that maybe it does not go the same way I wish.
Yeah. And the thing is, we are trying to be certain, you know, and this certainty doesn't come in this world.
Exactly.
It's not supposed to be
It
here.
Is not the world of certainty.
Yeah, and this is not something bad. Sometimes this lack of certainty is a skill itself. Let me give you an example. For example, there are so many microbes and germs in this world, okay? And if you try so many high dose of antibiotics, then it's going to lead your body to be resistant to the antibiotics. Okay, so always as a doctor, I have to keep that in mind. I cannot use these high dose antibiotics.
Exactly.
Okay? I have the certainty if I use these high dose antibiotics that this patient will be cured. But after this disease, there's going to be another disease that this person will be resistant to antibiotics. Okay, so here this lack of certainty will help me to find the dosage, dosage that is needed.
Exactly.
This is the same thing about the happiness. This is the same thing about success.
About your wishes, your goals.
And there is no certainty. You have to find the right dose of the moment.
Exactly. Just, you know, have a purpose.
Yeah.
Set your goals. Look hopefully and brightly. Do not be disappointed. Do all your efforts, but then have it in mind that if I lose for one time, it's okay. I can do it again. And again, if I lose, I can do it again. And then if it does not go according to your wishes, then maybe you have to rethink everything.
So I think I need to go for a short break, my dear Asma.
Yeah. Up until now, we said that we have no problem with the word laws of attraction, but unfortunately, there's no law for whatever we want to achieve in this world. There are many things that might happen, which some of them are outside of our control.
There is something which is proven, and it's interesting at the same time. When you drive a car, whatever you look at, you will actually deviate it to that destination.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
And this is nice. And the thing I want to mention here is that denying the laws of attraction doesn't mean that you shouldn't have the mentality to achieve something.
Exactly.
Yeah. And for example, if you have a goal, it's good to, for example, write down the steps, the structures, the schedule that you have to follow in order to achieve that goal. I mean, it has nothing to do with that part of your life. We don't deny it.
And see, instead of laws of attraction, I would call it being hardworking, being assiduous, attentive, and having the driving force. Like when I have something in my mind, when I have a goal, actually, I do think about it and I imagine myself in that position and I imagine myself achieving that career or that certain point that I wish to get to. But I always remind myself of the fact that do not go into the extremes because that is going to be detrimental for your health.
Yeah, exactly.
For your mental health. You would come to a cliff and then suddenly you're going to fall down off that cliff. This is the danger of getting too much into those attractions.
Yeah, and you know, generally, we have to go for the right way of calming down our heart and our soul. And the right way is not meant to be materialistic.
Exactly. You know? It's a spiritual.
Yeah, and the laws of attraction itself is materialistic, I believe.
If we, as we just talked about it, if we set everything, we try for them so hard and ask God's help, and then put it on His hand and tell Him, okay, I have done my best, and the end is with you. And I know that you want the best for me. Trust him. God, and that's the best way to... The best laws of attraction that you have to be attracted to is the laws of spirituality, and the connection that you have with your Lord.
Exactly. It was all the time we have for today's episode. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif. Ya Latif, Allah Allah, Allah Allah, Allah Allah, Allah.
Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said, "Whoever remembers us to Ahlul Bayt and his or her eyes fills with tears, his or her face will never burn in the fire of hell."
In the limelight.
The former German Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer has admitted recently that Germany has been hit hard economically over the past 2 years, including by the loss of cheap energy. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Bloomberg News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. Replacing Russian gas with liquefied natural gas, LNG, from the United States has exposed the European Union's energy system to major security risks. The United States, which started exporting its shale gas only in 2016, is currently the second biggest gas supplier to the European Union after Norway. In 2023, the United States became the world's top liquefied natural gas LNG exporter. many European Union countries dramatically increased LNG purchases in 2023, following the drop in pipeline gas flows from Russia due to the Ukraine-related sanctions and the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines in September of 2022, which rendered them inoperable. Ira Joseph, a senior research associate at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University, New York, said, European reliance on U.S. liquefied natural gas will only grow if more Russian gas does not reappear and the Qataris decide not to engage in a price war for market share. However, the analyst added that changes in U.S. policy could pose a major risk for Europe. In fact, U.S. President Joe Biden recently ordered a temporary pause on approving pending and future applications for liquefied natural gas exports, citing concerns over climate change. The halt is expected to allow the Department of Energy to update the economic and environmental guidelines it uses when approving new export licenses. The White House had made a pledge to Brussels to quickly review applications for new export capabilities, after the European bloc opted to wean itself off of energy supplies from Russia. According to Fred Hutchinson, President and Chief Executive Officer of LNG Allies, President Biden's announcement does not keep faith with that pledge. Energy Aspects gas analyst David Sadusky believes that the halt will almost certainly be undone if the Republicans retake the White House. David Sadusky said, this could be a pause for political purposes to appease Biden's base in the run-up to the general election, or it could be a longer halt to permitting that clamps down on the changes of these terminals being approved longer term. An unnamed senior European Union official told the Bloomberg news agency that the European Commission is not concerned about the bloc's growing dependency on American liquefied natural gas because there aren't the same levels of political risks as with Russia. However, analysts highlight potential challenges ahead. Jonty Shepherd, Vice President of Global Liquefied Natural Gas Trading and Origination at BP, had previously warned that the growing reliance on U.S. gas is creating a concentration risk for the entire sector. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story and tells us more. Ditte Juul Jorgensen, Director General for Energy in the European Commission, said the European Union will have to buy liquefied natural gas from the United States for several decades after the bloc opted to sharply reduce purchases from Russia. According to the energy official, the bloc's reliance on supplies of American liquefied natural gas is expected to persist. Jorgensen added, we will need some fossil molecules in the system over the coming couple of decades, and in that context, there will be a need for American energy. Brussels is aiming to improve energy security as it shifts away from Russian energy supplies, but is balancing that with ambitious targets to cut carbon emissions by more than a half by 2030. Beyond that, it is aiming to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050. According to analysts quoted by the Financial Times, Jorgensen's projections are expected to help clear the path forward for European Union buyers, who are hesitating over whether to sign contracts with United States suppliers beyond 2030. U.S. shipments of liquefied natural gas to the European Union more than doubled in 2022, increasing to 56 billion cubic meters compared to 22 billion cubic meters in 2021. Meanwhile, supplies of Russian natural gas made up only 16% of the EU's gas imports in late 2022. In 2021, Russian gas accounted for about 45% of European Union gas purchases and covered nearly 40% of the bloc's entire consumption. since the start of the Ukraine war, exports of Russian natural gas to the European Union have seen a sharp decline due to the imposition of Western sanctions on Moscow. The German newspaper the Augsburger Allgemeine has also covered the same story and tells us more. Former German Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer admitted recently that Germany has been hit hard economically over the past 2 years, including by the loss of cheap Russian energy. A deeper-than-expected slump in Germany's industrial production has affected most industries over the past 2 years due to shortages of raw materials and energy, for which prices have surged. Joschka Fischer explained, "We are in a situation in which we have a huge problem economically, technologically, and in terms of security policy. The cheap Russian gas is gone, and it's not coming back. The large Chinese export market has transformed from an opportunity into a threat. The EU's top economy benefited from cheap Russian energy for over 2 decades. It relied on the sanctioned country for 40% of its gas imports before 2022, making it among the hardest hit by the supply reduction. Given its previous reliance on Russian gas and the importance of cheap energy for its industry-heavy economy, Germany stands out among European Union countries in facing particularly acute difficulties." Recently, the Vice-Chancellor and Economy Minister Robert Habeck warned that the German economy had lost its competitive advantage after abandoning Russian gas supplies. Recent statistics showed that Germany is overpaying for current natural gas supplies due to still elevated prices, even though the country has more than halved imports of pipeline gas. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. Inflation across the Eurozone rose in December after an increase in energy costs, reversing 6 months of consecutive falls and easing the pressure on the European Central Bank, the ECB, to cut interest rates. Figures from the European Union statistical agency Eurostat showed consumer prices across the 20-country bloc rose at an annual rate of 2.9% last month, up from 2.4% in November. Economists polled by Reuters news agency had forecast a slightly higher reading of 3% for December. The increase in the headline rate comes after the end of government support for utility costs, alongside a smaller annual decline in energy prices in December than in November, connected to last year's one-off subsidy in Germany. The figures come amid speculation the European Central Bank will begin cutting interest rates within months amid a worsening economic slowdown across the Eurozone, having increased borrowing costs to the highest level since the launch of the euro. Financial markets widely expect the world's largest central banks to slash interest rates this year as inflation falls back after the shock from the COVID pandemic and Russia's war with Ukraine, while there are growing fears of recession in several advanced economies. Michael Field, the European market strategist at Morningstar, said, "Some investors will undoubtedly be concerned that this spike in inflation may put the European Central Bank off cutting interest rates sooner rather than later." Michael Field added, "However, central bankers were always aware of the potential for this spike in inflation, thus it shouldn't factor in on the decision-making process. All eyes are on next month's inflation release and whether we can get back to that all-important downward trend."
Bismillah. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The second phase of the revolution. On the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, February 11th, 2019. Today, after 40 annual celebrations of the victory of the revolution and 40 Fajr 10 days, one of the two centers of animosity has already perished, and the second one is struggling with predicaments that signal its death in the near future. Whereas the Islamic Revolution is advancing while preserving and adhering to its models. It is possible to assume an expiry date for anything, yet the global mottos of this religious revolution are exceptional. They will never expire, because they match human nature in all eras. Freedom, ethics, spirituality, justice, independence, dignity, rationality, brotherhood are not limited to a single generation or society, so that they would rise in a period and decline in the next. It is impossible to imagine a people who despise these values.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The reported cases of reluctance to these values were due to the officials who had shrunken from these religious values, and not due to their adherence to them and endeavors for achieving them. The Islamic Revolution, like a living and unwavering phenomenon, is always flexible and ready to correct its mistakes, but it is not revisionary or passive. It is positively sensitive to criticisms. It regards them as a divine blessing as well as a warning to those who do not act upon their words. Yet, it by no means takes distance from its values, which are blended with the religious faith of the people, thanks be to God. Since the establishment of the system, the Islamic Revolution has never suffered from and will never suffer from stagnation and recession, and it does not see any conflict and contradiction between revolutionary dynamism and political and social order. Rather, it eternally defends the theory of the revolutionary system. The Islamic Republic is not reactionary, and it does not lack perception and understanding in face of new phenomena and situations. However, it strongly adheres to its principles and it is highly sensitive to its frontiers in relation to its rivals and enemies.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The UK's first national demo since